Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Viewpoint is sponsored by Alonso and Arrow Solicitors of Merthyr and Manchester, successfully recovering debt for our clients for 13 years.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Good morning. The time is exactly four minutes past the hour. This is Giles Brown on TRE. Listening to Viewpoint Talk Radio, its current affairs programme, with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day with you for the next 2 hours or so. On today's show, we're going to be discussing a variety of issues, including the situation, the latest news coming out of Brexit, and more discussions, as always. The Queen's speech, which has been called by some Johnson's wish list, heavy on law and order yesterday, and also negotiations taking place ahead of the UK pulling out on the 31st of October. As well as that, we'll be looking at the situation with America, pulling its troops out of Syria, leaving the door open for the Turks to stage a campaign against what they see as terrorists, i.e. the Kurds, and the Kurds then appealing to Assad stroke Russia to help them fight off that. Looking at that situation, also looking at the latest situation in around Catalonia with yesterday's ruling by the Spanish courts to imprison, I think it's 12 Catalan leaders, and also going to be speaking in about 5 minutes or so with Charmaine Abouin, the British consul, with the British government's latest advice, or the consulate's latest advice ahead of the UK leaving the European Union because of Brexit. So a busy show as always. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at tre.radio, the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Joining me in the studio to my left is it's a story of two Johns today, two Jonathans today. I've got Jonathan Harper, better known as John. Morning to you, John.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. And Jonathan Tesco back. Good morning to you, Jonathan.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is all mine, he says. Well, we'll find out that in about 2 hours' time. You never know, but there you go. 952-78-4000. Let's have a look at what's making the front pages. Making what's the front pages in the UK and further afield. The main papers, England Stand Tall Against the Racist, seems to be the main headline, as well as reaction to the Queen's speech yesterday. All the papers this morning, as you wouldn't be surprised, to this condemnation and revulsion behaviour of the Bulgarian fans during the England game last night. Disgusting is the headline on the back of the Telegraph. The Guardian calls the supporters' antics sickening. Daily Mirror puts its story on the front page, calling what happened football's night of shame. The paper praises England players for taking a stand by threatening to walk off the pitch. The paper's columnist, Darren Luce, says football has had decades to address the cancer of racism. He thinks countries guilty of racist behaviour should be thrown out. They should be thrown out of competitions. Daily Express says vile racists may sprout their hatred, but England's 6-0 victory shows them they will never win. Daily Mail's headline is England 6, racism 0. The Queen is pictured in all her finery on many of the front pages as the papers report yesterday's Queen's speech. The Daily Express calls the programme of legislation a bold vision for Britain and says it's time to start looking at the UK's bright future post-Brexit. The Sun believes Boris Johnson's message, get Brexit done and we can focus on crime, the NHS and the environment, will strike a chord with millions of voters, but the Daily Mirror slams the speech as a Conservative Party election broadcast proposing a series of incoherent ideas. The Financial Times believes the speech's timing was at best eccentric and at worst a ploy to tie up parliamentary time and prevent scrutiny of the government's Brexit strategy. The Telegraph maintains there's cautious optimism from the UK and the EU that a Brexit deal may be taking shape, but the paper says the talks remain on a knife edge. According to the Times, an end is in sight, and the talks are likely to go to the wire. The Guardian claims welfare robots could one day decide benefit claims and drive vulnerable people further into debt. The paper says it's discovered that the Department of Work and Pensions is building a virtual workforce to take over some of the jobs using artificial intelligence. The Mirror, The Times and The Daily Express tell the story of Margaret Ford, who's just published her first novel at the age of 93. A Daughter's Choice is inspired by 633 wartime love letters from her late husband, Jim, and is based on her early life in Lancashire. According to The Times, The Express and The Eye, they report research which suggests that people in Britain really were more cheerful in the good old days. A study tracking the national mood has concluded that happiness peaked in the 1880s, for most of us anyway, when Queen Victoria celebrated her Golden Jubilee. Researchers from Warwick and Glasgow Universities and the Alan Turing Institute analysed the language used in millions of books and newspaper articles. They say spirits sank during the First and Second World Wars and were at an all-time low during the industrial unrest of the late 70s. That and the flares, I would imagine. Meanwhile, looking at the front page of El País in English, as you would imagine, dominated by events yesterday in Catalonia. Protests erupt across Catalonia against Supreme Court verdict on separatists. Demonstrators have descended on the El Prat airport in Barcelona, where there have already been police charges and disruption for passengers. And then several people were delayed yesterday. And judge reactivates European warrant for Carlos Puigdemont's arrest in the wake of yesterday's ruling. The Supreme Court is seeking to persuade Belgium to hand the former Catalan premier over to the Spanish authorities to face trial. And those are your headlines today on Tuesday, the 15th of October. We're going to be speaking to British consul Sharman Abuin in a little while, back after this break.
Viewpoint is sponsored by Alonso and Arrow Solicitors of Merthyr and Manchester, successfully recovering debt for our clients for 13 years.
Viewpoint
with Giles Brown.
And 12 minutes past 10 is the time. Speaking now with the British Consul for Malaga, Sharman Abuin. Sharman, good morning to you.
Morning, Giles. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Good to have you with us. We thought we could just grab a moment of your precious time, as the saying goes, as the deadline for the UK leaving the European Union has got many people worried about their residency, about their driving licences. I know that you've been putting together, all the entire British consul staff has been putting together a series of pop-up events in this run-up.
Yes. So you know that since 2016, since immediately after the referendum, we've had information events in the early stages. We were really interested in hearing what people were concerned about. We fed back most of that. You've touched on the things that people are most concerned about: residency, healthcare, pensions, their right to continue to live in Spain and to work in Spain if they work here. And since then, we've done some big events. Some of your listeners will have been to some of the bigger events where the ambassador's been down and addressed large groups of people. But what we've been doing more recently have been these smaller pop-up events, because what we've found is quite often with the big events, they're great for us to get information across on what we think people need to know. But as we're getting closer and closer to Brexit, people have stopped asking very general questions and are asking very specific questions about their particular situation. And so the pop-up events are very informal, but they offer an opportunity for people to have one-on-one time with someone from the consulate. So they're working really well.
And, I mean, are the main concerns the ones that they still were at the beginning of, I mean, ever since the referendum result came back and it had such an impact for residents in Spain, British residents in Spain? Are they still things like healthcare, pension, residency?
They are. But it's got a little bit more complicated for people. So one of the things that's been really difficult has been that at certain stages we've been pretty certain that we were going to leave with a deal. And, of course, the withdrawal agreement was really extremely clear on what citizens' rights would be. And then as time's gone on, it looks as if there was a distinct possibility that we might be leaving without a deal. So then people's questions were, well, yes, you clarified to me what I need to do in the event of the withdrawal agreement being signed off, but now it looks like it might not be. What do I need to do now? Is that different? So then that's been a separate set of questions. And of course, we're now in this very interesting moment, shall we say, where the negotiators are hard at it again, and we're, two weeks away from, 2 or 3 weeks away from the 31st of October, which is the date that we have stated we will leave the European Union. So it's been a little, so that's really been the difficulty, that sometimes we thought it's with a deal, sometimes we thought it's without a deal. But in essence, Giles, the advice to people is much the same, which is if you are here in Spain, we're actually very privileged because the Spanish government has taken steps to pass a Real Decreto, which more or less confirms to us that those people that are here already, as long as they are legally resident here, they will continue to have the right to stay here. So not only are people covered by whatever we agree in a deal or a no deal, but we also have the safety net of the Spanish government's arrangements, if that makes sense.
And so, I mean, despite what a lot of people have been saying about doomsday predictions about UK nationals not being able to still continue to live there, then the message you want to put out is that if you are legally resident here, you will still be legally resident because of the Decreto Real.
Absolutely. But it's worth, I mean, it is probably worth me just sort of emphasising, legally resident means that you have your green piece of paper, whether that's the A4 size or the credit card size. It doesn't matter whether it says permanente on it or not, as long as it doesn't have an expiry date on it, and as long as all of the details are still correct, so that is still your name, that is still your address, that is your most important passport, if you like, to being able to stay in Spain trouble-free. There are other things, of course, that we recommend that people do. Your healthcare, and this has been an issue. I know that lots of people have been very concerned about some of the wording around reciprocity. But just to confirm, most people will be able to continue to receive their healthcare in exactly the same way as they do now, at least until the end of December 2020. So just to look at the different categories of people, if you're working here, like you or I, we're paying into the system. We already contribute to the Seguridad Social. We will continue to receive our healthcare in that way. If people are pensioners and they're in receipt of their healthcare through the S1, so that means that the UK pays for their healthcare, they will continue to receive their healthcare at least until December 2020 in exactly the same way as they receive it now. Why I say December 2020 is because depending on whether we have a deal or we don't have a deal, we may then have to negotiate another set of arrangements. But the Spanish have made it absolutely clear that their intention is the same as ours, which is to make it easy for people to continue to be here. And then there's a third group of people that are accessing healthcare, and they're people that are neither working nor pensioners, and mostly those people are either paying for their healthcare through a private healthcare system or through the Convenio Especial, which is a system that they can pay into through the Junta de Andalucía, and that convenio will continue to operate. So healthcare is covered. And the two other things that we're just sort of suggesting to people that they do is change their driving licence if they have not changed their driving licence to a Spanish one. There's been a little bit of a scare out there where the Spanish, I'm trying to remember what it's called, DGT, Tráfico, have said that people need to have started the process of changing their driving licences by the 30th of October. It doesn't mean to say that you have to have completed it all. It means that you need to have started the process. And that's if you want to do the straightforward driving licence. I don't think that means that after the 1st of November, people won't be able to swap their driving licence. It just means that it will possibly be a different way of doing it. And you may well have to go through a lot more hoops. So our advice to everyone is, if you have a UK driving licence and you live in Spain, make your appointment now. Not tomorrow, now. There are appointments. Make your appointment to start the process of changing your driving licence.
Okay, yes, and the panel are all waving their licences at me here and the residency cards, just to let you know that to those who's applicable to, they have got their ducks in a row. If people want to find out more information, Charmaine, then presumably, the first place to go, and I know that the British Embassy has been very good on this, is sending out for the Living in Spain website, yeah?
Exactly. Living in Spain, gov.uk. Our Facebook, Brits in Spain, or if you're interested in the Spanish Real Decreto, you can go to lamoncloa.gob.es.
And that's excellent, isn't it? The Moncloa book.
It's in English as well. You can get it in English as well, so it's very accessible. And I suppose the only other thing that I haven't remembered to say is that people do need to check that their passports always have at least 6 months validity on them.
Yes, indeed. So check your passports, check your residencia. It's not, you have to have physical proof. You have to have the physical document, don't you? It's not good enough to say, well, I've applied for it and I've got the document somewhere. But if you can't find it, you need to reapply, presumably, yeah, for residencia.
If you don't have your document, you need to go and speak to the Policía Nacional or Extranjería,
yeah,
and see if you can, you know, if you can have a replacement document issued. My advice to people is, that is the golden ticket. Make sure that you do have it.
The golden ticket. There's an old saying, isn't there? May you live in interesting times, Charmaine. And I suppose this has been one of the most interesting times of your career so far.
I'm not sure that it's... I've wondered whether it's actually a curse, isn't it?
Well, I think that history will be the judge of that. But at least it's good to know that the British consul is doing all that they can to make it as painless, whatever happens. And we haven't got crystal proverbials to look for to see what's going to happen. But whatever happens in the next couple of months, it's sure to be you're sure to find out most of the information you need via the British Embassy, the British consul. Charmaine Albion, thank you so much for your time today. I know that you're busy.
Thanks for having me. And just to say to people, if you do have any issues, get in touch with us. Just look on the website. You'll see that there are forms to get in touch with us at the consulate in Malaga. Don't suffer in silence. It's what we're here for. Let us know.
Thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks.
Viewpoint is sponsored by Alonso and Arrow Solicitors of Merthyr and Manchester, successfully recovering debt for our clients for 13 years.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
That's right, Viewpoint with me, Giles Brown, and live from the CESA TRA Talk Radio, your voice in Spain, 25 minutes into the show. My thanks to British Consul to Malaga, Charmaine Albion, for her insight there. Check out the UK Living in Spain website for more information, and the La Moncloa website is also excellent, and it is in English. Just want to go back through. We didn't do the front pages of the UK papers today. Running through from the top, Mirror, England's football's night of shame. England stand tall against the racists. Horrific abuse from Bulgarian thugs, according to them. Sun says, outrage at vile fans. Bulger off, you racists. Bulger off is also the Star. Shame of footy thugs. Johnson's wish list is the eye. Nazi salutes and monkey chants. That's a crowd shame Bulgaria. Crown to the Y is the Metro. October 31st, Brexit priority in Queen's speech. Boris, this is the Express. I'll get this amazing country moving again. That's the Prime Minister unveils vision for Britain's future after quitting the EU. Times, Britain's speech sets out Prime Minister's election manifesto. Picture of the Queen arriving in her state coach. Johnson edges closer to Brexit deal. That's the front page of the Telegraph, along with England racism outrage. Financial Times, state of doubt, hint at Brexit uncertainty. That's the FT. Also, Daily Mail is 15 million reasons to think again, Barclays. That's how many times its savers made cash withdrawals from post offices in a year. So why is the bank banning them? And those are your UK headlines this morning. 952-78-4000 is the phone number. studio@tre.radio is the email. Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me on +34 645 99 67 95. Just looking at the latest situation as well, trying to get some updates about Catalonia. As I said, demonstrators descended yesterday to demonstrate against the Supreme Court ruling in the case of the Catalan separatist leaders. Yesterday, Spain's top court sentenced 9 Catalan separatist leaders to between 9 and 13 years in prison after finding them guilty of sedition in connection with the unilateral breakaway attempt of 2017. Let's go to, before we get on further with the business, let's have a look at what's happening on the WhatsApps. +34 645 99 67 95. You can call me on 952 78 4000. You can email me on studio@tre.radio, and you can leave a message on the Facebook post for the Facebook group, which I haven't opened. Yes, I have opened the Facebook page, which is Talk Radio Europe Official. Richard already in, Richard in London, saying we're not leaving, Giles. A run up to staying in. And also the FA needs to sort out their own mess before criticising others and sending pictures of England fans also doing the fascist salutes. So there we go. So having spoken to the British consul, Charmaine Arbuin, and after yesterday's Queen's speech, which some have said is Boris Johnson's manifesto for the Conservative Party, seem to be very tough on law and order, which is something the Conservatives always do. John Harper, any thoughts about the Queen's speech yesterday?
Well, basically, it was just an upfront manifesto. A bit of fluff, really, to be honest. I mean, it was completely irrelevant doing what he did yesterday with the Queen's speech. It is nothing massively dramatic in there. To be honest, I kind of get the feeling that I'm watching Tommy Cooper doing really bad magic tricks. I'm wondering whether or not at the end of the day he's going to pull the rabbit out of the hat or drop dead on stage. And that's kind of how I'm seeing Boris at the moment, that he's got this affable, very Tommy Cooperish type approach to things, which is very entertaining and could be hiding a very, very cunning plan. And I just don't know anymore. Initially, I thought he's got this worked out. They know something that we don't know. He's going to pull a stroke at the last moment and we're going to come out on a clean Brexit, as I prefer to call it. But I am not sure. I'm really not sure. As to what happens next, I don't know whether or not Boris and the Conservative Party are stitching up the Brexiteers. I think it would be a very stupid thing to do, because there's 1.74 million of them in 406 constituencies that might make a bit of a voting impact if they do that, or whether or not he really does have a cunning plan, a Baldrick-type plan, whereupon he's going to pull the thing out of the hat at the last moment and say, can't do that. Probably most likely, if he's going to do that, is can't do that because actually European law takes precedence over English law, and so therefore the Benn Act is not have any weight and power over and above the Withdrawal Act, which categorically says we're leaving without a deal if the deal's not done. I presented a deal to Parliament, they've rejected it. I presented a deal to the European Union, they've rejected it. Can anybody tell me why we should extend any longer? They don't want us on the deal that I'm prepared to put to the public. The public don't want the deal that they've put to us. The MPs and parliamentarians don't want the deal because they want to remain. What am I supposed to do? And I suspect somewhere in there is where he's angling for, whether or not that's a gap he can get through. And if anybody, you've driven as well, we've all gone down roads and thought, you've come up to a junction or something, you've come up to an area where there's cars parked and you're going too fast, and you think, am I going to get through that? My cyclist friend here will especially am I going to get through that, or am I going to actually hit it, right? And you don't know until you go and you hold your breath and you go through. Maybe that's what he's doing. But he could just be Tommy Cooper and he could just drop dead on stage.
Right then. Allegedly.
Allegedly. He definitely dropped dead on stage.
Could he invoke what I'm calling the Millwall protocol, i.e. nobody likes us and we don't care?
Well, more or less.
Right, yeah. Well, I think we'll keep it John. You could be John, and Jonathan, you could be Jonathan today. Otherwise, it's going to get very confusing with Johns all over the place.
Hello, John.
Jonathan. You were nodding furiously along to John's what John was saying. What's your take on the whole thing? Okay, you're living in Spain, you're living in Europe, but your take on what you see happening?
It seems very exciting. Being someone who's not going to be directly affected as much as the British people here, so it makes for entertaining viewing, and it also makes me very glad to be. To be an American in Spain at this moment, to not have so much sort of potential turmoil, and it's so strange because it's we aren't sure what's going to happen with people's rights. I mean the minister was just talking about how everything's going to work out fine, but let's hope so.
Indeed, yeah. This week, there seems to be a variety of discussions this week. I mean, Boris Johnson met with Leo Varadkar in meetings that were the point. The smoke and mirrors.
Smoke and mirrors.
Thank you, John. We seem to have reached a stage though where they're not revealing what the negotiations are because they're saying that could damage the future of the negotiations.
Yeah, I mean it's a little bit like D-Day, 1945 or what it was. You know,
44
was it? Well, they didn't go around saying, "Oh, well, listen, actually, we're telling you we're going to invade in Calais, but in actual fact, we're going to invade over here in Normandy." You kind of keep that sort of stuff secret, and it's been pretty much demonstrated by Parliament. That they have no regard whatsoever for democracy, and that they're actually moving towards effectively an American Supreme Court system where the law decides what's right, not the actual people, which is very interesting, and it's good experience. And I'm quite pleased that England's got a Supreme Court now.
Because Britain, please, we're going to get pulled up on that.
I did it yesterday on somebody's Facebook account that I only use surreptitiously, as I'm now banned. But I mean, the fact is, 84% of the people who live in the United Kingdom live in England. And I am English, and I actually am getting a bit fed up of the fact that I'm not allowed to say that I'm English anymore. I'm hardly English. I haven't been there for 35 years. But ethnically, I'm English. Ethnically, I'm Scandinavian. Ethnically, I'm Irish.
Yes, yes.
And ethnically, I'm God knows what in the background there. But, I mean, basically, I identify as being English today, and I want to be English. But anyway... enough of that, and I haven't got the phone ringing yet. Where are you? So, I mean, essentially, I think what you've got is a situation where nobody's showing their hand. The parliamentarians have shown their hand. They've clearly demonstrated, including 21 supposedly conservative MPs, that they actually are centralist and they want to be in the European Union. They want a centralised government. And the British people actually seem to be reacting in an adverse way to that sort of concept. It's a bit like this. We're going to get to Catalonia in a moment. But, you know, I have this firm kind of belief that if the majority of people say we don't want to come to your party or we don't want to live with you anymore, we actually want to do our own thing, if that's the majority, then you do have some sort of responsibility to adhere to that. Because if you don't, you get things like the yellow vest happening in Paris. You get riots in Barcelona airport because suddenly the government say we're going to do what we want to do and we actually don't care what you want to do. In fact, we're going to tell you it's illegal and we're going to put you all in prison. So that's all sort of happening out. You've got Extinction Rebellion to go on to another thing. Now, I've looked at that. I don't look at things the same way as most people do. I look at that and I think Extinction Rebellion is actually a test run. This is showing the Brexiteers, okay, this is what you do, guys, if you don't get your own way. This is showing the Remainers, this is what you do if you don't get your own way. And this is showing me that as a government, we go, oh, okay, Extinction Rebellion, they sound like nice people, they're on our side, they're in the same agenda as us, let's dance with them in the streets. And only yesterday did they actually start removing them.
952-78-4000, got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. What's your name, where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, caller.
Throwing in. Am I live?
Yes, you're live. You're on. Sorry. Good morning, Kate.
Morning. Kate Osblanca. Just responding to Jonathan rant.
John's rant. We got John and we got Jonathan. Jonathan is the one who's spoken most. That'll be John Harper then. Yes.
Yeah. What I found interesting is about his comments is that they argue absolutely obviously for a people's vote, second referendum as soon as possible, so that people actually know what people really think now. I don't understand, or rather I guess, why the Brexiteers don't seem to want it, because they're scared that it would actually reverse the official will of the people.
I think what they're scared of, and it doesn't include me because I don't get a vote anyway, probably doesn't include you either, Kate.
Absolutely.
But I mean, what I think they're scared of is that parliamentarians have shown that they're quite happy to fix it. And there is this habit in the European Union of keep voting until you get the right decision. So that's what they're scared of, that it will be fixed. And let's face it, if they'd have known what was going to happen, they'd have fixed it the first time. They just thought that they had it in the bag, so they didn't bother to put the fix in. Otherwise, you'd have had something like Sunderland or wherever it was, where, you know, 148% of postal votes came in suddenly.
There's no defence against immediately, before the 31st of October, artificial deadline, Boris's promise, was presumably to his financial backers.
No, it wasn't an artificial deadline, or it was actually the European Union's deadline. That's the date that they've said.
Yeah, they also
you have to either get out or you have to get on.
Yeah, they also said, don't waste the time. And what did the Gar Parliament do? Go on holiday.
Well, they didn't. They went on holiday, precisely.
And then the Conservative government decided it would
prorogue it.
No, it did not decide to prorogue it. That was Johnson later, once he became powerful. But they went into election mode. I mean, how 2 months wasted on that?
Yeah, but Kate, you see, you're...
Anyway, there was time to actually double-check that people still wanted what they said they wanted before.
Kate, okay? Thanks very much for that. We've got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. Thanks for holding. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles Brown. It's Jason. How are you doing?
Very well, Jason. You sound like you're calling from the inside of a cardboard box or a baked bean tin, Jason.
Well, it's funny you should say that. Anyway, so the thing is, I've not spoken on this subject for a while. The only people that want another referendum are the people that want to overturn the decision. You don't hear people that voted Brexit wanting another referendum. You can't have another referendum. It would be fundamentally flawed. Because quite rightly, people would have said, tried that, done that, don't work. And there'd be a lot of apathy, disillusionment, and people would feel, well, they wouldn't trust the system, so you couldn't have a fair vote. So another referendum would most likely get a different result, but not for fair reasons, through apathy, through people feeling betrayed. And the other thing is, if you go back to democracy at the source of origin, everybody's going on about democracy, the origin of it was our referendum, which has still not happened 3 years on. This deal that's been forced upon us was not a caveat in the referendum. So to me, what you've got is Parliament, between the Parliament, the EU, and the Remainers are trying to manipulate and twist things that we get a different outcome and get to remain, which is absolutely... I don't think another referendum is the best course of action. I think, like the Extinction Rebellion, I would incite public disobedience rather than... going down the legitimate routes, because it don't work, does it? Giles.
Jason, I've got to actually compliment you, because this is the first time I've ever heard somebody call in to do a phone programme that can mix concrete at the same time in the background.
I'm multitasking.
You are, aren't you? I hope that wall goes up straight, I tell you that, otherwise there'd be a problem. So...
Well,
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you're right on those things. These are all things that are, that are just the moment. Don't believe anything you're seeing. There's so much smoke and mirrors going on out there by both sides. I don't think we're going to know what the actual situation is until we get to October the 31st. And at that point in time, something will happen. And I'm not sure what anymore.
I think Nigel Farage is going to end up in Westminster. I think the next move of Nigel Farage, if this all goes wrong, will use the support he's got, which... just another quick point there. Anybody that comes out with the propaganda and rubbish that people no longer want to leave, you look at the results of the European elections and how the support very quickly snowballed for Nigel Farage's party. That proves the Remainers, Brexiteers are resolute and still want to leave. So all this patronising, people speaking for us like they did before, is absolute tosh.
Thank you very much for the call in there. We're just dealing with a rather large centipede has appeared just from beneath the desk now, and we're just going to deal with this because it just sort of nearly bit John on the leg. So we'll be back after this insect intervention. Right then, normal order seems to be resumed here after that interesting viewpoint. That's going to go in the highlights of the year. Right then, back to the lines. Good morning, calling you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, it's Charles in Mallorca here.
Good morning to you, Charles.
We have two options. Either we extend or we drop out because there is not enough parliamentary time for a deal, even if it's approved, to actually take place. I was looking at a tweet from a QC yesterday, and he quite clearly pointed out that we cannot actually... The Benn Act doesn't do what it's intended to do.
Right.
It does not allow enough time. There's not enough time between, let's say, on the deadline, which is, a few days away, we get something. They say, yeah, okay, we can agree with that. Europe says, yeah, we can agree with that. Okay, we've got a deal. But actually, we don't have a deal because it has to pass through Parliament and get approved, which means the House of Lords as well. And there just is not enough time, parliamentary sitting time, to allow that to happen. So we will, if that happens, we actually have the rather curious thing that we have the deal that we wanted or have been accepted, a compromise, but we will still go out without a deal, which means what the hell happens at the end of the month? We end up with a deal in process, but not a deal.
So
it is not approved.
So we're very much between the devil and the deep blue sea, I suppose the saying is.
Well, what it really means is, we have to go, either the Parliament's going to accept, okay, we're going to drop out and go for a clean break or crash out, whichever side you prefer to think of it. But it's either that or we have an extension. There is no way that a deal approved now, today, can actually come into force by the end of the month. There just is not enough time.
We don't have enough time, John.
Yeah, I think more to the point is that there isn't a deal that could be done that would satisfy the people that need to be satisfied. If a deal satisfies the Remainer parliamentarians, then it's basically Remain deal, so that's not going to work. If we come to a second referendum, they're only actually putting on there, do you want to accept Mrs. May's rubbish deal or would you rather remain? So that's not going to work. If they pull up a deal... which is anything short of a clean break, as the Brexiteers call it, that's not going to work for them either. So whichever way round, there's not a deal that can be done. And I think Boris understands that, most especially Dom Cummings understands that. And he's actually working on that strategy that the end result... If you define the objective, it's much easier to define how you get there. And Cummings has defined that there isn't going to be a deal that can be done, that the only way that they're going to actually garner enough support to get another Conservative government in power in the next 20 years is to do a deal that suits the Brexiteers. And the only way if they do that, then they will fight off the Brexit Party, who would be redundant because they've got the deal. If they don't do that, then the Conservatives and the Labour are saying goodbye, and you're looking at a very fractional parliament for the next 20 years, possibly, or 10 years, or whatever, because you need to have somebody that has control and authority. And at the moment, nobody has control or authority. So that situation has to change. And that situation changes at the point in time when you get to a fait accompli, which is, well, actually, we're not in the European Union anymore. And then you see how fast the deal gets done. Because then it's people who are the businesses, the money people, the banks, the whole lot. They need a deal because it's then costing them money. It's now outside of the European Union's hands because, well, hey, guys, you lost it. They've gone. There's 17% of our growth income gone. There's our GDP's disappearing. Now the countries, the individual countries, the individual businesses will want to put the pressure on to get a deal that will allow some sort of normality to return to things.
Your thoughts on that?
But in the meantime, we have a situation where I agree with you. I don't think there is a deal to be had. I can't see anything that's going to get enough support from either side to let it for it to go through. Because we have three factions. We have the dealers, we have the no dealers, and we have the remainers in Parliament. Yeah, so I can't see a deal happening either. But even if a deal is struck, even if one of those parties capitulates a little bit or makes an agreement, yeah. Okay, we don't like it, but we'll accept it, and an agreement is come to, it won't happen. It cannot happen. So you have an agreement agreed. But since it's not passed through Parliament, it doesn't come into force. Therefore, we crash out. We go out with no set things. I'm under pressure from my daughter to go and see my grandchildren at half term, which means I would be returning after Brexit.
Right.
I don't want that. I don't want that bloody hassle. I've cancelled the trip. I've refused to take the trip, which I would normally do.
Because do you think there'll be hassle getting back into the country after Brexit, even though you have a UK passport?
Yeah, not a massive hassle. I mean, I won't be refused. I've residencia here, proper residencia. I've been resident for 30 years. I've got an English passport, so I won't have any trouble going that way, and I shouldn't have any trouble coming back. In terms of, I will get back in; they won't stop me. Can you imagine the turmoil that's going to be at the airport?
Well, I mean, no
more. You know, I hate airports to start with.
Yeah.
I started coming in here before we were in the EU. In fact, I became a resident. I've been a resident before the Spain was even in the EU. Precisely. So, I mean, I'm belt and braces as far as residencia and permissions and all the rest of that rubbish goes. But the fact is that even then, that there was a bit of a mess at the airport. Yeah, I used to have to stand up there while some surly person in a booth took my passport and looked at it, looked at me, put a stamp in it, and then let me walk through again. Maybe added 10-15 minutes to my journey. I don't think we're gonna, I don't think the Spanish, I know the Spanish aren't, we are not stupid enough to actually throw out 41% of our GDP, which mm-hmm. is basically what we're looking at. The tourism, certainly in this region, is a very, very substantial factor. And we're not stupid enough to throw that out just because the European Union and England have an argument, because Spain and England haven't had an argument for a few hundred years now. And, you know, there's not really a problem. As long as I don't sail up the Channel again with an Armada, we're probably safe from any discussion between us and Spain.
Right.
We actually want to carry on with each other. We've got a long history. Our families, royal families, are united. We've been allies in so many different things. We've never actually, I don't think we've ever attacked Spain, unless you count that pirate
Well, there
guy.
Was, yeah, there was, you know, you could say guy. Walter Raleigh sort of...
Walter Raleigh yes. might have been attacking them
he
a
did,
little
he
bit.
He did bombard sort of Cadiz and Malaga too, so...
Oh, yeah, yeah, and yeah. Of course you've got that Nelson guy that yes. came round and did...
Right.
Yes, right. So, I mean, generally speaking, for the last few hundred years, we've been pretty good with Spain. I don't see we're going to have a problem. If I had to really choose, and you've been here long enough as well, if it really came to a problem, I would choose Spain. I would just go for my nationality, bite the bullet.
I'm very, very seriory considering doing just that. I, you know, I, I see myself as an immigrant, not an expat.
Right.
I don't see myself as expatriate. I see here as home now.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious after 30 years, if we don't see it as home, we actually should call ourselves masochists.
Right then. Thanks for your
well, actually was responding to some stuff on a forum this morning on exactly this thing. An awful lot of people I know who have been here almost as long as me, or as long as me, yeah, 30 years, just not that far short of half of my lifetime, but still see themselves as going home. They see themselves as Brits that still belong to Britain. I see myself as belonging here now. I don't.
Thank you.
You know, I've got a strong desire to go and see my grandchildren because my daughter moved back to England. She went to live in England, having got married. It's. It doesn't make any sense for me to move
thank
to
you,
England.
Thank you for your call in. We've got some more callers on the line, but thank you for your call in there. Good points well made. Good morning, caller, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Is it me, Gerald?
It is indeed.
It's Sharon. Yeah, okay. Sharon Alicante. Yes. Yet again, good morning, everybody. Giles, John is spewing out incorrect statistics. The expats or the migrants, I'm a migrant, I hate that word, expats, it gentrifies us. It might be 42% in Andalusia, John, but over all of Spain, their GDP for tourism is 12%, as is our services industry in the UK. So please stop throwing around statistics that are wildly out of kilter. You also forget Gibraltar, that's a great big question mark. Even Rees-Mogg, oh, by the way, you Brexiteers, you're going to be absolutely fine, because this charlatan of a Prime Minister never had any intentions of doing a deal. He has Farage on his back. Farage actually said to him a few weeks ago, if you go for any kind of deal, you'll have me to deal with. So Farage is saying, we don't do a deal because that will mean some kind of compromise with the EU, which he hates with all his might. And that I don't think that Johnson ever had, or the EOJ ever had, any intentions of doing a deal with anybody. This is all pretense. This is all acting. Although even Rees-Mogg did speak the other day about a compromise, I couldn't believe it, which is, it makes me suspicious. When you get people like Rees-Mogg talking about a compromise, something is fishy, something is going on in the background. So you needn't worry, because we're going to leave with no deal anyway. That was always the plan. And all this acting with the EU and pretending, it's not going to happen. So don't worry, we'll be out without a deal on the 31st of October. Regarding last week, I just want to correct somebody last week who said that our anxieties about healthcare were nothing more than worrying about Auntie Maud's blue rinse. I can tell you, and that other bigger things were going on, I was quite insulted by that comment, that the world, we had starving children in the world and wars going on. Why were we worried about healthcare? I was insulted because what is that person saying? Is that person really saying we've got to sort the world's problems out before we've got to sort the world's problems out, starving children, before we can worry about our own problems. But I remember that same person saying a few months ago, first of all, you have to look after yourself, which is right, in order to be able to look after your family, which is correct. Then you look after your neighbours, which is correct. And by the way, neighbours in our case are the EU citizens. And then you can look further afield to look after other people. That same person has just contradicted himself last week. So please don't insult me by telling me we've got to sort out the world's hunger problems before we can worry about our healthcare, and trivialising our worries. If you could go into my doctor's surgery, or as I've said this before, and you look around at the frail elderly people really worried about their healthcare, I'm not worried because I'm strong enough at the moment to speak on their behalf. I think you'd have to have no conscience to be also concerned for those people, not concerned for those people. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Points well made as always there. 952-78-4000. John.
Yeah, I actually agree with an awful lot of what Sharon said there. I mean, certainly, I've always believed that it's a spoof. We have to go through the motions of a deal because that's what everybody wants us to do. But if you know from the start that you can't get there, but you still got to do the performance. Well, then you do the performance. It doesn't matter. If you turn up at the club to do your stand-up act, and you know that there's not enough people in the audience to pay you at the end of the day, you know you're not going to get paid by the comedy club. You still do the gig, because otherwise you're not doing your job. And you also sound surprisingly like a sovereign individual, because take care of yourself, take care of yourself, take care of your neighbours. And your neighbours actually might well be European, they might well be African, they might well be Somalians, they might be anybody. I mean, they are your neighbours. That's why we give it a generic title. It's not specific to a particular type of people. It's whoever you have around you. And that's a sovereign individual type thing, as opposed to a centrist type opinion. And that's what you've got here, is a clash between centrism and sovereignty.
Couple of points to come through on all the social media, etc. WhatsApp +34 645 9967 studio@tre.radio. This one in from Comptroller. Although it's a well-known fact that 68% of all known statistics are made up on the spot, boom boom, why don't you challenge, this is me, blatantly wrong ones? Tourism accounts for 11.9%, apparently, according to that one. And this for Leslie, who says, are we not going to have time to have Leslie's? I'll come back to Leslie's in a minute in the second half, because we've actually flown through the first half of the show. What with the British, good grief, says yes. John Harper, stumped for words. We've dealt with the British consul, we've dealt with an insect invasion, and the bongos are going to start in a minute, which means... Yes, John?
One short thing.
Yeah.
The 42%, 41% I was referring to actually was a figure I plucked out. That was the GDP of what was represented by foreign house buyers and how much the house building industry went down in 2007. So I accept that that wasn't referring to tourism. That was referring to the fact that we buy an awful lot of houses here.
And those bongos mean that we're at the end of the first half of Viewpoint. We'll be back after the international national news.
Viewpoint is sponsored by Alonso and Arrow Solicitors of Merthyr and Manchester, successfully recovering debt for our clients for 13 years.
Discuss, challenge, inform, comment. Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests.
Viewpoint.
Viewpoint Talk Radio, Europe's current affairs programme, discussing the issues of the day, now with added centipede. 952-784-4000 is the studio. It's hiding under the curtain. It's hiding under the carpet somewhere, as some would say is my guest, John Harper and Jonathan Tesco. We're going to go straight to the phones, though. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hi, it's John from Islington.
Morning, John.
Morning, Giles. I'm very disappointed in you, actually. Spreading false statistics.
Okay.
That's the job of Johnny Purcell from Los Bleachers. I mean, you know, he's taking my thunder.
Well, I'm very sorry about that, but we try to, you know, we try to displease everybody as much as possible on Viewpoint.
Well, one thing that I read a few days ago, which would show the Spanish attitude towards healthcare. Spain is only one of three countries has said they're going to go through with the EHIC. They're going to keep the EHIC going. And Spain is probably the only main country that's going to do that. And I think Spain will probably do a separate... I mean, I know Sharon's very worried about it. She's entitled to be, and so are the expats. But I think that's very encouraging for expats, or not expats, or people living in Spain, that Spain is going to take a positive view to it, which... And I hope the UK does the same, but the EHIC carries on. As I say, Spain is only one of three countries that have actually said they're going to continue with it. And the other two countries, I can't remember, well, they're very, very small, though. And I think they're outside the EU. But so I think that's very positive for the people in Spain, that the Spanish government itself, and I'm sure the UK will reciprocate, are very positive towards the health of the people, I call them expats in another word, living in Spain. So I think it's a good positive thing.
Thanks for that.
Anyway, the only thing I would like to make, one thing I'm worried about, is I'm waiting to see what happens. We don't know what this deal is. I should imagine it's not going to be a very good deal. And I don't think if we're going to pay $39 billion for the deal, which turned out to be just a patchwork from Theresa May's, I think the vast majority of people, like myself, would say it's pointless leaving, stay in, and unfortunately, I do think it will wither on the vine in a few years, the EU, but I think if you're going to pay $39 billion for a deal, it isn't worth a can of bloody beans. I think it'd be ridiculous to leave. But I'll leave you with that.
Thank you very much for that call in. Gary Martin, once again, okay. Good morning. Thank you. Good to hear from you. 952-784-4000. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling?
Good morning. My name's Myra.
Good morning, Myra.
Let's see if I can just be very quick, because the reason I was urged to phone is so much misinformation coming out. The last caller, the EHIC is a European health card. There can't be an agreement between Spain and the UK. The agreement is at the moment just that will go on until, I think, December 2020. We don't know what's after that. That's on all the government websites as well. And as regards paying 38 or whatever billion or million, billion for a deal. It's not. It's the money that Britain has already signed up to for all the things that they were going to pay in the future if they leave. It's the divorce bill. John, who's on the programme, I don't know if he's still there. Well done, Sharon, for calling up and making a point that you can't massage figures to suit yourself with the amount of income that comes from the British, this whole idea that Spain will collapse without us. The other thing from your speaker today, the withdrawal agreement was not turned down by the EU. The withdrawal agreement was turned down by Parliament. Boris Johnson has not put forward a withdrawal agreement. He's just put forward a proposal from Northern Ireland. So all I say is, if you're going to be talking on Talk Radio Europe, please get your facts right. Do not massage the information to suit yourself or your beliefs. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call in there. 952-784-4000. 952-784-4000. Studio at tre.radio is the email. The Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official, and you can WhatsApp me, +34 645 996 795, and it's to the WhatsApps we go. From Michael Senker, tell Sharon that 27.5% of all statistics are made up. Okay, and enough of that we've had this one now three times. Okay, we know the old joke about that. That went on exactly. Also, Richard, well said, caller. Let's have a look at some of the right. I'm already getting hassled at UK airports return from Spain. Don't try calling on the WhatsApp. We can't take calls in on the WhatsApp, by the way. It's only for text messages. Gibraltar border closing. John has been disseminating misinformation. Real estate activities by foreign direct investment accounts for 41%. Keep away from the stats. And according to Spain's Property Registrar Society, foreign nationals bought 12.46% of all properties. We have another caller on the line. I'll bring you live on to Viewpoint. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, sorry to come back on the lady. That EHIC thing was on a BBC report and the Times newspaper. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. What I do know isn't true is that it is the $39 billion, which the Lords have said we don't owe a penny, is in dispute. It's not cut and dried, as the lady came out. That's nonsense. It is not cut and dried, and it won't be cut and dried. And as I say, that is in dispute. And unusually, the Lords said the UK owes nothing. But it doesn't really bother me. Just to say that, but I'll look up the EHIC thing again. But it was last week, and it came from, they said that three countries have signed up to it. So I'm not sure myself. I'm not an expert on anything, but that's what I read from the BBC, and I will look it up again.
Thank you very much for that. We've got messages coming in. Another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Is that me?
It is indeed you, madam.
Oh, sorry. Hi, guys. It's Carol from Mercia here. Sorry, I've only just tuned in a bit late this morning. Myra was just saying about the EHIC card. I mean, I presume we're all receiving letters. We received our letters the other day from the NHS
right.
in Britain, stating that there's an agreement at the moment that if we do withdraw, we will still get... Excuse me, I've got a bit of a cold. We will still get health free in Spain for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
And they are already discussing, to make it
continuing. And then there was the bit about the pensions, say we'll get the pensions for the next 3 years and they will have increases. And again, they are discussing to go onward from that. But about the EHIC card, they said we won't be able to use that anymore. Britain, if we travel to Britain, health will be free. But if we go anywhere, we have to take a copy of our S1, which is, you know, the letter that we get from Britain to get the free healthcare in Spain. So okay. That's what it said. I presume everybody will get the, I'm a B, so I'm quite early. So whatever your initial is, you know, from your surname, I guess they're sending millions out, which must cost a fortune.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for the call in there. Your lines are busy again this morning on Viewpoint. Morning, call, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. Is that me?
It is indeed you.
Hello, good morning. Brian here, Giles.
Morning, Brian. Glad to have you back with us, sir.
Program, as always. When John rang up, as you know, and we've had, when I first, you know, the Brexit first thing started, I was on virtually every week, you know. And I always enjoyed listening to John, but I'm afraid he's absolutely wrong, and I agree with Myra completely on this.
Which particular John? Because we have a selection of Johns to choose from today, Brian. We've got Jonathan, we've got John Harper, and we've got John, of course, from Islington.
Oh, I'm talking about John from Los Peliches.
Ah, okay, fine.
Good man, he's rang regularly. I never got round to meeting him, although he said he would have reached you one day. But no, I mean, John is wrong here completely, and Myra is absolutely right, Giles. It is commitments, previous commitments made, and it will be honoured, and there's no way if the Conservative Party tried to sort of say we're not paying it, say there wasn't a deal, but let's look more positively and say there might be one. But if they just said we're not going to pay you, but I think there'd be a massive international court, and I think Britain would lose.
Thank you.
Okay.
Do you think we'd get back the 11 billion that we've given to the EIB? The central bank or whatever it's called.
I think we've Brian has made his point left. Jonathan,
I'm just wondering if the plan is to wait long enough for the EU to fall apart and then there's no one that's going to be asking for that money.
A period of attrition. Let's go to the WhatsApps though. People are forgetting, and blimey, the WhatsApps have gone lively as well. People are forgetting that Mr. Farage said before the referendum a 52% win for Remain would still mean fighting on. So I'm still fighting on as a Remainer. I'm also proud to be English, British and European. Okay, you think, John, wait till you see the number of people on the street for People's Votes March this Saturday. You are completely disengaged for what's actually going on in the UK. I'm back in the real world. I'm in the UK. I have stage 4 cancer. I saw my oncologist on Friday, who cannot guarantee a regular supply of my painkillers or indeed any other drugs, which are most of which are made in Europe after October 31st. People like you and Jason make me sick. Oh yeah. And I'm glad you're okay sitting there with your residencia. What about people like me and future generations of Brits who dreamed of living in other parts of Europe? People like you have taken away my freedom. Another one in. Well said, Myra. The fact is that one cannot win against a right-wing populist like John Harper. That's why there is a Brexit or a Trump. And also coming in, I thought that Brexiteers claim that the UK is the fifth richest country in the world. So why are they scrimping over £11 billion here and £39 billion there? Going to the emails. On the emails, we have the following. Thank you so much. Right. Oh, hello, people. I have to say I'm very surprised there are still leavers calling in and saying the vote was made. Live with it. Especially when you realise that every justification for leaving has now been shown to be untrue and is therefore the reasons behind their decisions is no longer valid. It's like ordering a pair of headphones from Amazon. Others are available. And when you open the box, you find a food mix and you say, that'll do. There's a quote attributed to John Maynard Keynes, thank you, which says, when the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do? I would support a second referendum because the facts are so different now from 3 years ago, which means there would be the only true democratic option. Leavers accuse Remainers of not wanting to accept the original result, but by the same token, a Leaver could accuse a Remainer of not wanting a second chance because deep down, they all know the result would be very different now that all the info is out in the open and it's obviously how catastrophic a Leave decision would be. And from a BBC report of the 10th of October, the Spanish and Belgian governments have said UK tourists will be entitled to medical care as long as the UK agrees to do the same. for their citizens. And the Portuguese No Deal law guarantees healthcare to UK tourists who show a valid passport until the end of 2020. So that brings us up to date with all the WhatsApps and emails thus far. John, you had your hand
it kind of lost me a bit because you carried on a bit, but you had one, two back there that was saying, well, start off from the beginning on there. Geez, this is a bit difficult when all these people come in at once. The basic fact is nothing's changed from the Leave voters, actually, because the reason that Leave voted to leave was because they didn't fancy the idea of becoming a vassal state in a European Union totalitarian federal government. And that hasn't changed. That's got worse, actually. The federal government bit is now totally out in the open. They're absolutely admitting that that's what they're looking to do. And that ain't going to work for Europe. I mean, there's no way that Spain, Italy, Greece, Germany, France actually could be run by a centralised government, because we are very, very different. It's not the states where you've got different states, but they each run almost autonomously. They only operate on a federal level on defence, on financing and things such as that. You're looking at the EU trying to bring in a federal government where every single facet of your life is controlled by an anonymous person who you don't necessarily even know the name of and you haven't voted for. That has not changed. You are looking at federalism against sovereignty. And the sovereign vote of the British people, 17.4 million, 1.3 million more than Remain, who the centralist, the federal vote was rejected. We do not want to be part of a federal Europe, or they don't want to be part of a federal Europe. They want to be a sovereign nation in control of their own things without having a law overrides them. And funnily enough, as I said earlier, the law that overrides them, the European law, is probably the one that we'll use to get out.
Oh, John, federalism, laugh my AO, etc. Where are you getting these ideas from? Live to the line, that's on the E. That's
Lisbon Treaty. Read the Lisbon Treaty.
Read the Lisbon Treaty. Right then, to the lines. To the lines I go. Good morning, caller, you're live on TRE.
Yeah, good morning. Sharon again. I had to come back to John on this one because he's just, again, so out of factually incorrect. John, learn the voting system, learn the European voting system, because if you learn that, you'll realise that we do actually have elections. What worries me, you clearly influenced, he hasn't said much, Jonathan, but you clearly influenced Jonathan that the...
Jonathan should have been waiting for his moment because we're coming on to the Kurds in a minute, so he's waiting for his moment.
Oh, right. Well, you clearly think the EU is a failure. As an American, the last place I want to go. By the way, the double insult for me, Jonathan, is being dragged kicking and screaming towards the American way of doing things. So that to me will be the ultimate insult. I'm happy to accept the result of the referendum that we're leaving. I just want us our rights retained here. I do not want to go to Trump's America. Regarding the 17.4 million, it was 38% of those eligible to vote, because many didn't vote, particularly the young people. Thank you.
Doesn't come into it, Sharon. It's the people that vote, actually, that counts. The eligible to vote doesn't come into it.
Absolutely. I'm not disputing that. What I'm saying is when you try and tell us that most of the people in the UK voted to leave, it's not factually
correct. Just the majority. Just the majority of the people that voted.
No, the majority. The
majority of the people who voted to leave.
Yes, they did, but they didn't. Well, I'm not going to... Look, John, we could spend the next hour going through the same old ground. I'm not going to do it because we've been there. It's very boring for other people to listen to. I know what I mean. They know what I mean. And 38% of those eligible voted. But yeah, I get your point. But it's just in the real world, it doesn't match with the real world.
Thank you very much for your call in, Sharon. Always good to hear from you as well. One of our regular correspondents. Live to the lines again. Morning, Cooley, live on TRE.
Yeah, sorry to harp on. It's John from Islington.
John.
Very nice to hear Brian, actually. I'd be delighted to have lunch with him at the Oasis on the beach any time. Glad to hear he's back. I was going to ask you if he...
Yes.
I knew he wasn't too well.
The Viewpoint lunch service is obviously up and running. But thank you very much.
Yeah, what I wanted
There'll
to come
an
back
app
and
soon.
Say...
You can swipe left, yes.
Yeah, I looked at the article again.
Right.
And this was 4 days ago, and it's a government article saying that they want to extend the EHIP tool 31st of December 2020, and so far only three countries have agreed to it, and the prime one is Spain, and they've agreed to that till 2020, and that is on the government report. So, I mean, I am talking secondhand on it, but it looks as though that really is the case, which I think is saying flexibility on Spain's part and whatever. But if you look up on, if you even Google EHIC exit Brexit, it gives you the number, the government number as well, and that is what's been said, and that says only a few days ago, so it may well have changed. But anyway, but I'll have to get my phone number to you guys, and you can give me a call.
We will try and put.
I'm not back for 3 weeks anyway.
I think you're saying you're not buying for a minute then. John, thank you very much for the call there.
Okay, no problem.
Going live to the lines again. Good morning, Cooley. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Morning, Giles. It's Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Good morning. I keep hearing this misquoting of facts and untruths and that. But there are hardly any facts at all to quote, because simply nobody knows what's happening. Nobody knows what will happen. Personally, I think we'll get to the early 1st and they'll say that they've agreed to do a deal, although we don't have time to do a deal. Therefore, we will then put it back a period of time, 6 months, 2 years, I don't know. But as I said from the start, nothing will change. Reading an interesting article this morning in Reuters, it says London retains a global finance throne amid Brexit chaos. London's financial market is absolutely booming. There's the second largest office block in Europe's going up full of banking. The FX market has tripled over the last 10 years. They now beat New York. This is amongst, I remember you actually asking me a question before when I was talking about banks, that would they all desert London? Well, it seems that they're not. And London seems to be the capital of the world when it comes to finance. So that doom and gloom has not come to fruition. In the last 10 years since what they call the Great Recession, exponentially, poverty in Europe and the world has gone up massively and unbelievably. And I have witnessed in the last 10 years the biggest transfer of wealth in the history of money. So much money has gone from the poor to the rich. Now, we've always said the gap is big and the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. But the way it has been done by the central banks and mainly by the European Central Bank, they copied Japan. At least Japan are an individual country, an honorable country, and a country that are considered never to default on their debt, whereas Europe is a completely different ballgame. Now, I've been called many names on this program, and I was named as a hypocrite this morning by the very person that says that don't get personal on this station. I agree. I stick with what I said initially. And the reason I'm an anti-globalist and the reason that I say that Europe have caused these problems because they're continuing to drive down interest rates, continuing to print money to prop up the European dream, that which wouldn't exist if it wasn't for this money. These very banks that many, many people have been knocking for years and years and years are the ones that are causing the problem in Europe right now. Now, when you drive down interest rates and you give forward guidance and you tell the world that you will drive down interest rates and the rest of the world copies, the only way you can make money on a bond of an interest rate that is lowering is each time it lowers, it's worth more and you get that your old one's worth more and you make profit. So billions and billions have been made by people sitting on their hands waiting for these banks to keep driving down interest rates. They cannot go wrong. The whole asset system is propped up by printed money, mainly by the European Union. Germany is teetering on recession. They're in recession. The UK seems to be doing okay at the moment. We haven't started printing money again. But the whole of the European dream is held up on dodgy money. And everyone you could, and the reason I say that look at the bigger picture is because of this. All these small problems that we have, yes, indeed, look after yourself, do what's best for you. But in the bigger scheme, the larger scheme, the whole world is running into the buffers. We're looking at massive trouble, and it's mainly at the doorstep of Europe because they're the ones that are doing the massive amount of printing. They're the ones that are allowing unfettered migrants coming in. They're the ones that are putting poverty onto the streets because they cannot follow up and do what they've promised to do.
Peter?
And when it fractures and goes all Pete Tong, it is Europe that's brought us upon us. And that's why I am so anti-European.
Thank you.
Globalist.
Got other calls on the line, Peter, but thank you for that. And I never thought I'd get the word it's all gone Pete Tong on this particular show, but thank you for that. Glad to the lines as well. Good morning, Cool. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Yes, good morning, Giles. It's Pompey Gary here. Is that me?
It is indeed you, Pompey. Good to hear from you.
Yes, hello. Yeah, one of the reasons I don't call in the past 3 years, etc., is because of the misinformation and the rubbish on this programme. I hate to be cynic, but everyone keeps talking about the EHIC. Can I just remind people, that's just for holidaymakers. That's not for the that's for the holidaymakers that come over here. That's not for people that live here that abuse the system, and Sharon might agree with that. But another thing I've got to say is most of the people on this program are talking about are illegal here anyway. They're not on the padron, they're not, you know. I mean, one of the programs, I'm going back about 8 months ago, one of your other colleagues' programs, is someone phoned in, and I just roared with laughter, when they asked for some advice from one of the so-called experts on this radio station, and they quote, "I've been here 28 years, they said, and I haven't registered, I haven't paid tax, etc."
I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, and they're worried. They shouldn't bloody be here anyway. If you haven't put in, you can't take out. So, you know, and I'm, as you know, I'm a great, great Brexiteer. Love the title. Absolutely love the title. And Europe was here before the so-called EU, and it's still going to be here afterwards. And everyone's moaning about free movement, etc. You mean to tell me that we're not going to have that? Are you telling me that they're going to throw all the Europeans out of the UK and Spain is going to, you know, it's just not in anyone's interest, and it's just been scaremongering for the past 3.5, almost 4 years. People start getting, I mean, there's going to come an agreement. Myself, which people are just being bored with it. If they go for Theresa May or anything like that, as a Brexiteer, it's all been a waste of time if they go for anything like to meet a Theresa May's agreement. But if it's good for money and if it's good for business, then we'll stay in or we'll come out. I've said it when I was allowed to be a guest on this radio station. I'm on record for saying it would take between 5 to 7 years after we've allegedly come out for it all to be sorted, and I still stand by that.
Gary, good to hear from you again. Thank you for the call in there. Gary, of course, a normal, regular caller to this show. Good to hear from him. I will take one more call, and then I want to move on away from Brexit. So let's go live to the lines for one more time. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE.
Kay Costabanco, just a quick bit of information. Gary may not like the whole business of the freedom of movement being lost. That was Boris's proud boast yesterday in the Queen's speech.
Yeah.
That it's ending for Britons.
Thank you for the call in. I'm going to take another call in as well, just quickly. Good morning, call you live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. It's behind you again.
Yes, Jason.
Oh, that corner, that feels sick. Can I recommend a nice cup of Yorkshire tea with a nip of whiskey? That'll pep you up all that. What I wanted to say was that if there is a global recession coming, surely we're best without our portfolio in trading spread far and wide across the world, instead of being tied to a fairly minuscule trading block. I don't know what percentage EU is on a global scale. That way, and dealing with other hemispheres, probably more chance of riding it out. Probably John's better qualified to speak on that. That's really all I wanted to say on.
Okay, are you buttering a particularly difficult scone there, by the way, in the background, Jason, to go with the Yorkshire tea?
Oh, just one thing. Well, obviously, listen, I've put principle above. I'm basically falling on my sword because I don't have a residency. I'm actually working in the UK at the moment.
Right.
Because I feel that more important than my personal situation, which is all most people think about, that in principle, I think we should leave. And I'm basically feeling the consequences at the moment, but I think on principle we should, because Europe's becoming like a totalitarian super state. And for evidence of this, look how difficult it's proving to divorce ourselves from it, because the tentacles have spread so much into our culture that we're not steering our own canoe. And if you don't steer your canoe, you end up crashing, don't you?
Jason, I will leave you with that one and leave you to do whatever you're doing in the background then. Right then, we're going to take a break from Brexit and come back after this.
Viewpoint is sponsored by Alonso and Arrow Solicitors of Merthyr and Manchester, successfully recovering debt for our clients for 13 years.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Just about 20 minutes to go of this week's Viewpoint. Been very live, been very lively. We want to get away from Brexit, if we may, though, however, and look at the situation that's unfolding between Turkey, Syria, and the Kurdish nation. Many of the papers in the last few days have focused on the fallout from Donald Trump's decision to pull American troops out of northern Syria. The Guardian described it as reckless and dangerous. It gave Turkey the opportunity to attack Kurdish forces there. The worst case scenario is that a new humanitarian catastrophe and the resurgence of so-called Islamic states. Telegraph said that Trump was sending dangerously confusing signals in a volatile area when any conflict can have a much wider geopolitical implications. And the Kurds had lost thousands of fighters, removing the threat posed by Islamic State, and therefore deserve to be protected from the threat now posed to them by the Turkish military. Of course, Turkey launched a campaign against what it saw as the terrorists of the Kurds. Jonathan, your thoughts on what we've seen in the past week in northern Syria with Turkey going after what it sees as terrorists?
Just that it seems by the reaction by many people in different countries that it seems like the U.S. is kind of officially the world police by people's opinions, and us leaving, it's, you know, how can they leave their allies? How can they give Turkey the green light? I didn't realize personally that it was the United States' responsibility to keep all countries from invading other countries.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about that, the green light and all the rest of it, beware of Greeks bearing gifts, I think, is the thing. If you look back, the last time American gave a green light to anybody, it was a guy called Saddam Hussein, and he had a green light to go into Bahrain. And then immediately
Kuwait,
after...
Kuwait, I think.
Kuwait, was it?
Yes.
Oh, Kuwait, right. Immediately after he'd gone into Kuwait, they bombed him to the Middle Ages again. So they just set off on them. With Turkey, you've got a situation where there is an Islamic uprising there, if you like. It's growing in power, and it's losing the secular side of Turkey, which is the one that the world likes. It is losing emphasis to the religious side of it. And I could see, I mean, bearing in mind that you can never actually second guess the Trump, but I would guess that very possibly if Trump says, okay, you go ahead and do that, it's probably the bad worst news you're ever going to have.
Well, this morning the US has just
said they're going to destroy them.
Sanctions on Turkish ministries and senior government officials.
Yeah, first off, I totally agree the Kurds deserve their own country. They are a nation state. They are a nation people. They are an ancient people. They've got a definite tradition and culture there. They've got their own language. They've got their own tribal lines. It's their country. And the fact that somebody called Mr. Churchill, I think, drew a few lines on a map and stuck them into somebody else's territory and didn't give them their own because they weren't considered to be important enough, doesn't matter. The fact is, if somebody's going to stand up and say, we no longer want to be controlled by these people, we want to be controlled by ourselves, then that's good enough justification for me. Anything other than that. So the Kurds, I think, eventually, I could see Trump coming in and rescuing the Kurds from the Turkish oppressors and decimating the Turkish economy, which is pretty strong. Although it has problems, if you look at the underlying economy of Turkey, it's a very, very strong situation. And I know four or five mega companies there that operate all over the world that you would never have heard of unless you actually delved into Turkish finances. So, I mean, you've got a situation where I think that's what's happening. I think Trump is pulling another blinder, and you're going to end up with seeing, in the meantime, what you're getting is a good chance for Turkey to obliterate a whole lot of ISIS people, and it's not us doing it, so that's nice. And then at the same time, he can blame them for obliterating a whole lot of ISIS people, and oppressing the Kurds, give statehood to, or sovereignty to Kurdistan, knock Turkey back about 15 years, and force Syria into actually doing a deal with Kurds to do it. So that's my take on that.
Going live to the lines. Good morning, Cordial, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles, and good morning, John and Jonathan, Sean and Fuengirola.
Morning, Sean.
Great comments, by the way, John, on Brexit. Thanks a lot. I know we're talking about the Kurds. I would like to just make the important point that Donald Trump is so popular with millions and millions of Americans, precisely because, as you said so well, Jonathan, is it America's job to be the policeman of the world? Now, many of us have great sympathy with the Kurds, and of course, they're not a nation state. They wish they were. They did come close to it in 2017, but they cover four countries. And it's historically been a very, very difficult situation. But the great thing about what President Trump wants to do is minimize the losses of American servicemen. Most interestingly, just the other day in his Minneapolis rally, he was talking about the most difficult job that he has as president, which is to go to Dover, which is there, Dover, where the bodies of the troops come home from Afghanistan and everywhere else that they are or have been based. And the parents are there of the sons and sometimes daughters that have died. And the stories that he tells are very, very touching, very moving. He says far worse than all this impeachment stuff that he's having to deal with is that. So it's a key part of Trump. He's not inconsistent. So as far as the Kurds go, yeah, there are, obviously it's important they get protected. Trump does play 4D chess, as John has pointed out. He's doing very, very clever things. He has said, for also, by the way, just to give you an idea of his respect for human life, he says, look, I could sort out the Afghanistan problem in no time at all. All I'd need to do is take out about 10 million people, most of whom would be innocent civilians. So I'm not going to do it. But what I am going to do, says Trump, is make sure that our troops are out of harm's way as much as possible. And I think most Americans would agree with that. The other thing is, it's made out, as far as the Kurds are concerned, that America has some kind of massive debt to the Kurds. Well, actually, they were never really very much involved Syria in the first place. Under Obama, they were hugely ineffective and almost deliberately so, and that was partly because, or largely because, Obama was orienting his foreign policy in favor of Iran and therefore the Iranian-backed Syrian government. So he made out that he was against them, but in fact he did nothing, hence the red line in the sand. So it's a complicated issue, but I think that Trump once again will come up trumps, and he will make the world a more peaceful place. And in the meantime, my prayers are very much with the Kurds, and it's probably high time we took Turkey out of NATO, because Turkey has been a major headache for a very long time. The problem is the Americans, a lot of pressure on Trump from the deep state, they know they've got major military bases in Turkey, and of course that is a bit of a problem for them. Anyway, thanks.
Thanks for the call in there, Sean. Going to the WhatsApps, +34 645 99 67 95, or you can call me on 952 784 1000. You can WhatsApp, you can email me even, studio@tre.radio, and you can send me the WhatsApp, 645 99 67 95, to the WhatsApps. America policing the world. It's a role you choose. It supports your economy. I laugh out loud. Trump make the world a safer place. That's hilarious. This is from Buzz in Mijas. Actually, it was the Treaty of Versailles 1919. The treaty forgot about the Kurds and consequent meddling by the great, in italics, powers. Some thoughts there, Jonathan. You were nodding your head to some of these points. Should America? Do you think it's seen as a stab in the back? Is Trump right to get his troops out of there? I've been following on social media and tweets. A lot of the military personnel were saying that they were upset by what they see as a betrayal of the Kurds.
Yeah, to me, it's so hard to separate politics from, you know, opinion in these people that are saying that we've abandoned our allies and we've been stabbed in the back. For me personally, I think it's good that we took our troops out of there. I don't know how you can explain to parents who've lost their children or people who have, you know, given up limbs to say that, well, we did this because we wanted to protect these people, that these, you know, halfway across the world, that these other people are calling terrorists, and you know, their own country doesn't want to support them. And I just think that's a hard thing to do. And I think, you know, what Trump said the other day, we went in there to handle ISIS. We've done that. We're going to leave. I tend to agree with that. I feel bad that for the Kurdish people that they've lost, you know, sort of a their backup, but we can't stand up for everyone's rights in all of the world who are being oppressed by other people.
952-78-4000. Good morning, caller, live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Gal. Final blast from me.
Yes,
Jason again. To your American panel member, respectfully say, I agree with you in principle on the fact that America should not be world police. But the problem is the timing. They'd already placated themselves in that role. So by leaving at this point could create a great problem. I see a bigger problem coming. The superpowers with their proxy warmongers, i.e. Russia, will now step into the fray, right? And then you find yourself in and out more times than an indecisive cricket umpire. So what do you think is going to happen when Russia get involved? Where does America stand then?
I guess I just wonder. It all just seems like which side you're on. I mean, calling Russia warmongers when, you know, the United States is dropping
Russia
bombs all over the place.
I'm not calling Russia warmongers. I'm saying that they'll probably back. They might end up back in Syria, and somebody will end up back in Turkey because Turkey's NATO. So what? It all gets a bit confused, doesn't it? I think by solving one problem by leaving, you've opened the precipice and a vacuum for a more complex situation developing. And I think we'll reap the problems of that, if I'm right, in the coming months.
Yes, I absolutely agree that it is opening the door for more complications and issues, but I wonder when is a good time to pull out of being the world police? Is there going to be this optimum window and finally we can start removing ourselves from all these countries that really we had very little reason to be in the first place?
My answer is any time except time.
Except today. Anytime but today.
Thank you for your call in there, yeah. Jason. John wants to come in with a point there.
Yeah, just a couple of points. I mean, all authority, I mean, the world's policemen, all authority comes with responsibility. And all responsibility should come with authority. And I think Trump, probably more than most other people in the world, recognises very much the line of consent, of chain of command, if you like, of authority, responsibility. He's very good at ducking his responsibility when a company goes wrong. He just duck it and bankrupt it and stick it to the side. So he understands that very well, because that's actually what it's all about. When you're actually in control, it's because you're the biggest guy on the block. You're the guy in the street. You're the one of the craze who became the leaders of the East End between the criminal fraternity, because everybody knew that if you had a problem, you went to them and it would be dealt with. If you go to the police and it would be reported, you go to the craze, it's dealt with. And there's an advert running at the moment on one of the networks, which says about a property company, oh, your tenants were kind of true, you're not going to have a problem with them anymore.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of what being the authority is. So that's the first thing on there. Secondly, as I said, I don't believe that the Kurds have been abandoned. I think they're being used as a pawn, as a bargaining chip. They've been used to being killed by everybody for many, many, many years.
You can't say they mean used to be being killed by people.
Well, they're used to being abused. People have been attacking the Kurds all the way through.
Yeah, we have no friends but the mountains. That's the Kurdish saying.
Precisely. So, I mean, the Kurds aren't particularly going to be unaware of the fact that they've been dumped in it. But they will actually, if they come out of it, and they may even have had that promise, because that's the other thing authority and responsibility goes to, do your deals in advance. They may even have had that promise of, hold Stan for 3 weeks, it's going to be bad, you're going to get all sorts of hell bombed out of you, but then we're going to do the following, or then this will happen, or don't worry, we will come out. So I think you've got to look at it that way. Authority, responsibility. If you want to have the responsibility, if you don't want to have the responsibility, you haven't got the authority. If you do take the authority, you have a responsibility. How you handle that responsibility is very, very different sometimes. And what is appearing to happen may not actually be what you're really doing. I mean, somebody earlier on here accused me of all the false statistics and propaganda and all the rest of it. And, you know, I think we have to understand, or people should understand, I understand, we, that's the world, that's the humanity, that's the people, are in a war. And it's a war between centralism and sovereignty. And every single person will actually decide whether or not they prefer somebody else taking care of them or whether they prefer taking care of themselves.
Yep.
So, to me,
that's the key point in American politics, and I feel, you know, an extension in at least the Western world is, you know, people who want more being taken care of and people who want to be in control of themselves. And it's for better or worse, it's got us Trump. It's going to get us him for another few years. And I know where I stand.
Live to the lines.
I know where you stand.
Live to the lines again. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Where's your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, good morning. Sharon Alicante.
Yes,
is it me? Sorry.
It's indeed you, Sharon.
Sorry, Giles. If you look at a recent, this doesn't include Trump, but the previous American governments, haven't they been responsible for America initiating a lot of these wars in the Middle East and continuing to do so? The day America stops selling its arms to Yemen, I will believe that Trump is a peacemaker, but at the moment he's only doing it for votes. And nobody asked America to police the world, as that message said to you, the WhatsApp message said. It's good for their economy, isn't it? It drives their economy along with services. And while we're talking about that, world debt, there was something on about world debt the other night, and they were saying that London and New York, the stock exchanges, are the biggest lenders. They have a big responsibility alongside trade deficits to get people, the world, the different countries, especially the poor countries, into debt. And the problem isn't the EU, it's the London and New York lending freely to countries who are unable to pay them back. But the lenders get paid back by the IMF. So that's the cause of the world debt, not the blooming ECB. Thank you.
Thank you for your call in there. Back after this.
Viewpoint is sponsored by Alonso and Arrow Solicitors of Merthyr and Manchester, successfully recovering debt for our clients for 13 years.
Viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe with Giles Brown.
And we've flown through this show. Some quick points of order. Buzz, what has politics got to do with any of these debates? Is the super money makers that decide what politicians can do? The US are pushed into these positions to protect their global capitalization. They're the same as the French and the English, used in the 18th, 19th and 20th century. Also, Alan LaCalla, America seems to be quite happy to be the world's police if there's oil or arms sales involved. And they rightfully accused you because you did disseminate misinformation and got caught out. So there you go. Right, thank you very much. We're running out of time on this week's Viewpoint. It's been live, it's been lively. My thanks to my guests, as always. To my left, and that's going to be a laugh, is John Harper.
Yeah, to the left. I mean, how dare you?
Absolutely, always good to have you in. And Jonathan Tesco for not only dealing with the calls, but also dealing with the multi-legged beastie insect that ran across my leg a little bit earlier in the show.
Yeah, glad I could be of service, and glad I can represent you know, America.
America. Right then, this show will be repeated at 6 o'clock. And my thanks to Dawn, who said it's maybe a time for a centipede joke to defuse the Brexit business. Why did the centipede arrive late to the TRE studio? Because he was playing This Little Piggy with his friends. Thank you, Dawn. Thank you, Dawn, for that. Thank you for Jonathan Disturbing of the Legged Beasties. Talking of which, Stephen Ritson is up next.
The views expressed on Viewpoint by invited studio guests and callers do not constitute an opinion endorsed in any way by Talk Radio Europe.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this program, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.